adjust this microphone constantly for the range from Mark Painter to Vicky back to me. A lot of forms we see over and over again to the point where you hardly notice them. You might not have noticed Alex coming up with the offering, because Alex always comes up with the offering. Because for Alex, it's important to take something from your hands and put it up in front of your eyes. You know, it's not empty. It's not an empty moment. Well, emptiness, talking about Japan and autumn, we're in a church, so it must be making you think of Zen, right? You've got to be thinking of Zen by this point. Well, Zen, Zen, Zen. It's everywhere these days. There's now Zen chocolate, Zen makeup, I just learned about this, and even Zen fly reels for fishermen. But where did it all begin? The Japanese word Zen comes from the Chinese chan, which itself is derived from the Sanskrit dhyanam. That means meditation or reflection. So Zen has been on quite a journey already, from India to Japan before it reached the English-speaking world. It took a long time to find us, but it's become such a part of our vocabulary that it seems like we've been searching for it too. Now you hear it all the time. It's kind of a Zen thing. She has a Zen-like concentration. I had sort of a Zen moment. At last, we seem to find the right word for something we couldn't express before, even if we aren't always quite sure what we're expressing when we say Zen this or Zen that. That's no surprise when you realize how cautious Zen masters have always been when it comes to the use of words. Just a few here and there seem to do the trick better than any long analyses of the predicaments in which we human beings so often find ourselves or lose them. Here's one from Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, one of the first and still one of the best Zen books in English. It's called, Is That So? The Zen master Hakuin was praised by his neighbors for living a pure life. A beautiful girl, whose parents owned a food store, lived near him. Suddenly, without any warning, her parents discovered that she was with child. This made her parents angry. She would not confess who the man was, but after much harassment, at last named Hakuin. In great anger, the parents went to the master. Is that so? Is all he would say. After the child was born, it was brought to Hakuin. By this time, he'd lost his reputation, which did not trouble him. But he took very good care of the child. He obtained milk from his neighbors and everything else that the little one needed. A year later, the girl mother could stand it no longer. She told her parents the truth, that the real father of the child was a young man who worked in the fish market. The mother and father of the girl at once went to Hakuin to ask his forgiveness, to apologize at length, and to get the child back again. Hakuin was willing. In yielding the child, all he said was, Is that so? He could always find the right words, even if they were always the same words. Well, don't you wish it could always be that easy? I hope that you have no trouble now finding hymn number 17 with words by William Blake and music by Ralph Vaughan Williams. Hymn number 17. I love that hymn too. You could put the two of them together and with a common title that says, So you didn't know you could sing, did you? Because your voices are really doing a lot on both of those hymns. A lot more than maybe we think we can. Well, you might remember a few years ago that I went to Japan with my family. July, I'm sorry we weren't there for the beautiful spring or fall months that we've heard about. We were there for the summer, which is, you know, kind of like Florida in the summer. But as this month-long stay in the summer of 2009 neared its end, we realized that we had acquired a pretty sizable collection of coins. We wanted to keep a few of them, of course, but the rest of them would add too much weight to our baggage. We counted out 1,000 yen and then went to the bank where the teller spoke a little bit of English and told them that we wanted to exchange the coins for bills. We were hoping they'd say, "Ah, so desu ka? Is that so?" and then grant our request. But changing bills for coins would have been no big deal, but going the other way was. The tellers informed us with regrets that the bank would have to charge a 300 yen fee to give us 1,000 in bills, roughly a $3 charge to get $10 back. A friend who'd lived there for many years later told us that small store owners would have been happy to make the exchange. The only problem was that such shopkeepers did not usually speak English. There was one small shop nearby where I'd produced enough Japanese to order some rice ball snacks for my family and to make sure that my wife's did not contain any egg. My wife and son were very impressed. Now, I'll admit that I even startled myself, but I was afraid that I would never be able to find the words to negotiate the exchange of coins for paper money. I felt too shy. I felt like I'd never find the language for that. Later, though, I reflected how many accumulations of foreign coins, of strange joys and wonders, of pain, grief, woes, surround us every minute of every day, weighing people down because they can't find the words to share them and maybe make the burden lighter. If Zen can mean reflection, I suppose you could call this a Zen moment for me. But now, right now, at the end of our trip, there's not a moment to spare. My wife and son and I wanted to visit some of our favorite sites in Kawagoe, the sister city of Salem, Oregon, where we live, and which we'd grown to love like a real sister. To see most of those sites, we'd need to take a train to the city's center. We were about to cross the street to the station when a very old man pulled right in front of us on a bicycle, blocking the intersection, like he wanted to stop us. We weren't sure if we'd seen him before, but he seemed to recognize us. He had something that he wanted to give to Saad, who was just about to turn 12. He said something in Japanese and held out a pink plastic bag and made the universal head-lifting gesture that means, "Here, take this, it's for you." Saad looked to us for a clue about how to respond. We made our own gestures of approval, and so he took the bag. But what was in it? There were two things about the size of chestnuts, dark, oval-shaped. Oh, gosh, I hope he didn't think we'd been walking a dog and forgotten to pick up afterwards. Maybe some other foreign family had seen it. The last thing we wanted was to raise bad memories of the U.S. troops who must have been here in this town after World War II, not always behaving well. Certainly this man was old enough to remember. But look, no. Luckily, the things inside the bag were moving. We untied the little looped handles, and we saw two large stag beetles, like those on the cover of your order of service. We said, "Arigato gozaimasu," and smiled at each other for a few moments, until Pam finally pointed to the station and said, "Train." At which point he nodded and rode off on his bike down the street, looking very pleased at how things had worked out. Obviously, we couldn't take these bugs back to Salem, but we couldn't tell that to the old man. We didn't have the words. Stag beetles are very popular in Japan, selling for about $5 to $10 each in pet shops. Sometimes adults like to stage combat between two males, betting huge sums on which one will first push the other off of a log. No harm is done to the bugs, though bank accounts may be another story. I'd be surprised if there isn't a Zen story about that somewhere, but I just haven't heard it. We didn't want to feed any gambling habits, but we'd seen boys playing with them in the parks. So after getting off the train, we first photographed them and then left them on a bench in a park near the station. Maybe some boys or girls would find them. Next, we made our way on foot over narrow streets designed more for pedestrians than cars to the ancient Buddhist temple of Kitain. Large insects seemed to be the theme of that day. The air was just filled with cicadas. One of them flew off of a branch from a nearby tree, but it had a deformed wing and it landed nearby. I caught it and I held it for Saad to photograph before letting it go on its way. We visited the temple gardens and the shady enclosure that houses statues of the Buddha and his 500 disciples. A big green praying mantis crawled across his peaceful head. Worship and religious ceremonies still take place at Kitain, though it also functions as something of a park or a museum, retrofit with electric lights and modern plumbing. If you go a little further north, though, you'll come to what we could call a working temple, much like this is a working church, not just an historic example for tourists to visit and see how things used to be built. Visitors are free to wander into this temple if they wish, but they need to respect the ongoing activities. Most of that compound was new, maybe the same vintage as this place or one of our sister congregations like Shalom or the Islamic Center. But like any Buddhist temple, this working temple had a number of small shrines on its premises as well as its large central meeting places. Many of these are shrines that are associated with Shinto deities, testimony to the harmony of Shinto and Buddhist religious expression. I've heard Japanese students in the U.S. say things like, "We don't have religion in Japan," by which they mean that there's no sense that choosing to observe one kind of religious practice means you can't observe those of another faith tradition. Why shouldn't you be able to? Isn't that a person's free choice? They don't get this exclusionism. One shrine at this particular temple was to the god Inari and was covered with little offerings in the form of foxes. Foxes are believed to carry messages on our behalf to Inari, who is associated with both human fertility and the fertility of the soil. Foxes are also believed to love fried tofu. What's not to love? And you might have had a delicious treat called Inari sushi, sweet rice stuffed in a fried tofu pouch with its corners turned up to resemble fox's ears. You know that one? It's often many kids' favorite when they first try sushi because it's sweet. Well, some of the fox offerings were carved from wood, they were molded from plastic, or they were even stuffed animals, but all were unmistakably foxes. There's another shrine that was built around a water feature, sort of a pond and stream, no doubt moved by an electric pump, but nevertheless it was quite beautiful and natural looking. People had taken care to make it look that way. Many turtles swam or sunned themselves on rocks and logs. So many turtles, several different varieties. Perhaps they'd been donated as offerings too. I don't know anything about what the turtle would mean. But there were also quite a few small human figurines, some wearing little sweaters or hats or other clothing, that were scattered about this water feature. These little figures are called Mizuko Jizo, and each one represents a human fetus whose life ended as the result of miscarriage, abortion, stillbirth, or other causes. Abortion has been legal in Japan since 1948, and of course was quite common long before that. There is no large-scale religious or political opposition to the procedure. And local Buddhist belief holds that fetuses and even newborns have no souls until after certain rituals have been performed. But this doesn't mean that anyone regards ending a pregnancy as an easy or casual thing, no matter what the circumstances. Words for such feelings can be especially hard to find. The Inari shrine addresses human fertility from one side. The Mizuko Jizo shrine addresses it from another. The little figures serve where mere words simply can't. People want to do something, and here's something they can do. Pay temple officials to have the mother's name or those of both parents written on a Mizuko Jizo statuette, and it can live there like an adopted child, like the adopted child of Hakuin. You can then come whenever you want to visit, change its clothes, give it water, or even manage to have a conversation when you do manage to find the words. Mizuko means water baby or water child, referring to a belief that such children may be stranded on the banks of the river, separating life from death. A Jizo is a bodhisattva, a potential Buddha who remains in this world to serve us. This one is here especially to protect and serve the child by the river. It's their own special bodhisattva. And that sense of a protector no doubt helps its parents much, much more than shouting outside of women's clinics will, or shooting at the doctors who provide the care that they have chosen when you can no longer find sufficient words to express how much you object to that procedure. Maybe in time we'll witness the evolution of a better ritual way for our protesters to express themselves. Something with little statues, maybe, so they won't feel that they have to shout or shoot so much at real people. That is, if they really believe as much in the human soul as these people who have no religion. If only souls were the issue instead of controlling women's bodies and fertility. Here's another story from Zen Flesh, Zen Bones. There was an old woman who'd supported a monk for over 20 years. She'd built a little hut for him and fed him while he was meditating. Finally, she wondered just what progress he had made in all this time. So to find out, she obtained the help of a beautiful young woman. This story is from the 13th century, by the way. The beauty of a young woman has been used to hook our attention since long before there were movies or advertisements for Zen eyeliner or Zen body lotion. "Go and embrace him," the old woman told her, and then ask him suddenly, "What now?" The girl called upon the monk and without much ado caressed him, asking him what he was going to do about it. "An old tree grows on a cold rock in winter," replied the monk, somewhat poetically. "Nowhere is there any warmth." Is that a haiku? The girl returned and related what he had said. "To think I fed that fellow for 20 years," exclaimed the old woman in anger. "He showed no consideration for your need, no disposition to explain your condition. He need not have responded to passion, but at least he should have shown some compassion." She went at once to the hut of the monk and burned it down. Words just weren't enough to express what she felt. To heck with that monk's poetry. Respect for sexuality, including a woman's sexuality and not just her fertility, should not be abandoned even if you yourself renounce sexual activity in pursuit of religious goals. I remembered this story as we stood looking at the turtles and the little Jizo. And then a woman came to visit the fox shrine with her own little fox-like dog tucked under her arm. She looked very worried about something, and we suddenly felt like we were intruding on her worship space. Better leave before someone comes along to dress or undress one of the water babies, to cry with it, or to have a conversation here in this working church. We said farewell to central Kawagoe for now and caught a train back to the neighborhood where we'd been staying. As we were crossing the street from the station, who should ride up on a bicycle but the same old man who we met in the morning? He had another bag with another stag beetle in it, very large and very eager to claw its way out. This one really had energy left in it. He presented it to Saad, and this time he said something that included the words pet shop in English. We thanked him again and smiled, and then made our way back to the guest house where our bags were already packed. But on the way, we passed the local pet shop. There we saw a squirrel in a cage that seemed just as eager as the beetle to escape. We saw a pair of house slippers embroidered with a message that we could read. When animals are vivid, there are a lot of nature. Saad and I actually start singing this. When animals are vivid, there are a lot of nature. When animals are vivid, there are a lot of nature. You know, strange English, you know, for sure. But hey, we were the visitors who didn't know enough Japanese to exchange our coins for currency. We guessed that this was probably a sort of environmental message on the slippers, meaning that animals need a good natural environment in order to survive and thrive. We noticed then several small cages with stag beetles for sale. Later, we learned that children try to catch breeding pairs of these insects so that they can sell the offspring to pet shops, a way for little people to get their feet wet in the local economy. Maybe the old man had collected stag beetles during the war or afterwards during the occupation, selling them to help make ends meet for his family. Maybe he had shown them to some American soldiers, wondering if they wanted to buy. Maybe they had smiled. Well, maybe not. Maybe they'd been confused by what those lumps were in the bag, some form of feco-terrorism or feco-resistance. So maybe the old man had been telling Saad that now he had what he needed to get a start as a pet shop supplier. We'd been afraid for a moment that he was giving us the business or returning some dog business that he thought we'd left behind. Maybe he'd seen us around the neighborhood for the past month and had taken a liking to Saad, seeing something of himself in this skinny, earnest little kid. And now he wanted to give him something he could use to start a little business of his own. Maybe it was an invitation to stay and become part of things. We'll probably never know. We didn't have the words. All he had was the beetles to share, and all we had were our smiles. And sometimes those just have to be enough.